Vadem, the underground magazine of the Terezin Ghetto, is a multimedia traveling exhibit that deconstructs and reinterprets the literary work of a secret society of Jewish boys who created the longest-running underground magazine in a Nazi camp. Vadem was their voice, their defiance, and their connection to life before. Using pop art, graphics, drawings, and paintings, and then prose and poetry of the teenage prisoners in Terezin, the exhibit breaks down the original pages of Vadem, then reconstructs them in the form of a contemporary magazine. The exhibit runs through May 31st at the El Paso Holocaust Museum. And today, my guest is Jamie Flores, Programming and Education Director of the El Paso Holocaust Museum and Study Center. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
So I got to tell you, when I first learned about Vadem, I found it super exciting. And I think it's because we're communicators, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But just to know that this existed,
it is such an amazing story and a very little known story, really, for how much was published afterwards of what the boys did, how much information and documentation we have now. But it really is a little known story for the most part.
It almost sounds like, or what I've been reading anyway, like a little micro Dead Poets Society. They had a teacher that kind of led them.
Very much so. They had a mentor. His name was Isinger. He was the head of what they called Home One, which was a room in a converted schoolhouse within the Terezin Ghetto. And he is the one who kind of steered them in the right direction, but it really was led by these young boys who were 13, 14, and 15 years old. Their editor was only 14, and really an amazing prodigy. Just incredible work that came out of this time.
That's what it gets me to. So they had an editor. I mean, there was a structure.
Yes.
I saw that there's drawings, mm-hmm. and then the reproduction of the magazine itself, they would do by hand?
Yes. Yes, it is so incredible. They really had it broken down into departments like a normal magazine. They had a circulation department. They had an arts and graphics department that did the interviews around the camp, like a normal magazine we see today. And because of limited resources, they would create one version of the magazine, one hard copy, and their means of distributing it would be to read it aloud and then pass that around the camp.
And even within that, they had certain rules, right? Because the whole idea was, I mean, how do you keep the longest running zine within a Nazi camp?
Right.
So there were rules. They could only read it at certain times and all that. Can you tell us about that part of it?
Well, it was highly illegal because Vadem really was a means of resistance and defiance because it was keeping their hope alive. It was keeping their identity alive. And the Nazis were not only trying to destroy lives, they were trying to destroy all traces of identity, of who they were before for the Holocaust. So by creating this magazine, they were defying the Nazi order. So they had to keep it very secret. They had to read it aloud after curfew. So that was kept very secret. They had lookouts posted as well. Mm-hmm. And they used pseudonyms. Nobody used their actual name. They used nicknames.
Do you know how they gave each other their nicknames or how
it
those
varied?
Were developed?
Peter Jintz was the editor, and his nickname was just NZ for his last name. There was one particular young boy who was one of the few survivors left in Terezin at the end, and his nickname was Trixie. I love that one. And it is because he had a crush on a girl also in the camp, and her name was Trixie. So the boys gave him that name as his
God.
Nickname.
Oh, my God. The worst kept secret was his crush on Trixie.
Yes. So that you could see such humor that they still had in the darkest of circumstances.
Well, and speaking of the humor, I mean, a lot of the content itself is very lighthearted. It's funny. I mean, there were cartoons in there.
Oh, absolutely. Very much satire that they use, political cartoons, poking fun at the Nazis, at themselves, as a way of just keeping up who they were. They were just teenage boys like anybody else.
But defiance, there's such beautiful pleasure taken in defiance.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And reading some of the work that they did and looking at the drawings, you can just sense this defiance of being defeated. Even if their lives weren't going to be taken, who they were was never going to be taken.
And that need and that fight for expressing themselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Can't take that away from
anybody. You can't take that away.
So we're talking about these guys now. a lot of them, or the majority of them, were gassed at
some point. Yes, there were a total of 92 boys that went through Home One, the majority of whom worked on Vetem in some form or fashion. But the vast majority of those boys were taken to Auschwitz. Of the 92, only 15 survived. Now there are only 5 who are still alive.
How old are they?
Now they're probably in their upper 80s.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how did the magazine make it out?
Well, that's such a great story. So the young man whose nickname was Trixie, actually,
oh, he was Trixie.
Right? I just love that. He was the only boy to stay in Terezin the entire time. Everyone else was deported to some other camp, primarily Auschwitz. So Sydney, at the end of the war, as the liberators were coming in, but as the Nazis were attempting to wipe out any last witnesses, he actually buried the magazine. There were, at this time, 800 pages.
Wow.
A total of 83 issues that had all been saved, and he buried them in a metal box under the bunk. And at the end of the war, came back and rescued it. If it had not been for him, that would have been destroyed because of the evidence that it gave.
So how long were they buried in there before he got to come back? Do you have any idea?
I don't know exactly. I would say probably a couple months because he was left in that camp until liberation.
And you think about it. I mean, if you're released from a camp, the last thing you want to do is go back.
Right.
But then your gold is there.
Yes, but he had that foresight at such a young age. I think he was maybe 15. To go back and to see the value in that, knowing that most of his friends were gone, but that was the last piece of them.
Mm-hmm. So how did this exhibit come to, or tell us about how it's being brought into modern day? Because it's kind of modernized. So what would it have been now?
Oh, that's the great part about this story is it's so relevant to now, especially with how it relates to young people.
Of course.
And so because we love that so much with its connection to youth, we are doing a workshop, a youth day actually, called Creative Activism. And we are inviting young people, primarily high school students, to come in and learn the story of Vetem and then take it to today. And we're going to ask them to find a social issue that concerns them, that has been on their minds, and to create their own magazine just like the Boys of Vetem, and to have that voice and to show them what resistance can mean, what protest can mean when you see injustice or there's something that you are struggling with. And it's very relevant to today. We still have, well, we have anti-Semitism still so much. We have such a discrimination and so many social issues that affect young people in particular that we want them to take the lessons of history to today and to take that even into the future.
Mm-hmm. So will it be a digital version of Vetem, or what are you envisioning as far as?
Well, we're hoping to do both. We're going to do kind of the old, not super old-fashioned, but a zine. So they'll hand create one, and then we'll have a digital format as well. So we're going to do both with them so they can get that historic tie and also bring it to today.
Now, if you're listening or if you have a child that's in high school that you know this would fit, how do they register or how do they become a part of this?
Well, they can just contact the museum. The registration will be coming soon. The date is May 6th. And if anyone is interested, they just have to contact me at the museum and we'll get them signed up for it. There's
that
no
is the
cost.
Coolest.
It's going to be such a great day.
So are you going to be their mentor on this one?
Yes. Yes, I am.
You got to put on what's his name again? The teacher's hat?
Oh, Isinger.
Yes. So you'll be Isinger that day.
Yes, which is an honor.
I bet. What a great idea. Okay, so then you also said you have a speaker coming in toward the end of it. I'm telling you now, don't wait till the end of this. Go see the exhibit.
Yes, please do. This exhibit, it really is incredible for really all ages, and we have been getting great feedback. We do have a speaker coming in from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. She's coming in at the end of May. Her name is Christina Chavarria, and she's an expert on Peter Jintz, who was the editor. So she's going to be talking about him and all the evidence that she has found about him, his diaries. She's met his sister, been in his home. So she's going to be speaking on that, which is going to be a beautiful way to end the exhibit.
That's going to be so incredible. Speaking of, and I may have this wrong, but I have you here, so you probably know this. There was an astronaut that took
Yes.
A picture of him with him?
Well, Ilan Ramon actually took one of Peter's drawings.
That's what it was.
Peter was an amazing artist. He actually created 120 pieces of art. And one of them was called Moonscape Landing. And it was actually his imagined view of the moon. Ilan Ramon took it with him on the Spatial Columbia, which, as we know, was destroyed. And he lost his life. And that piece of work was gone as well. But he wanted to take that piece of Peter with him because it's the drawing itself and the story of Peter has such an impact. And it just shows such imagination and intelligence and loss at the same time.
Right.
But then there's that tragic part of the Columbia as well that ties into it.
It's mind-blowing how, you know, it's the same and not the same at the same time.
Yes. How things kind of come circle.
Really? Go see Vadim. But then you were telling me you have a very special event coming up on April 23rd that we'd be remiss if we didn't mention.
Yes, thank you. We do have a special event. It's called Yom HaShoah. It's our Holocaust Days of Remembrance commemoration. And on this day, we remember all of the victims of the Holocaust, and we honor the survivors that are still alive here in El Paso, as well as their families. And it is it's a really special event where we just have that time to really pay tribute to them. It's a beautiful ceremony. It's open to everyone, and we'd love to have the public join us.
It's quite the opportunity that you're offering
It is. And it really stays with you. It's probably my favorite event that we do.
It probably gives you purpose, right? Like, oh, why are we doing this? Oh, here it is.
It's such a great reminder. And it's not just history. When you see the survivors there and you see their families, it really brings everything home of why we still have the Holocaust Museum, why we study this and why it's still so important.
Well, I'm grateful for all the expression. I mean, you know, you see things like Vadim, you know, and to know what a coping mechanism.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When everything else is taken from you, to still be able to create and have a voice, it's incredible.
Today, my guest has been Jamie Flores from the El Paso Holocaust Museum and Study Center. Thank you so much for sharing this expression with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.